Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations to keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
Anomaly presents with your friends, the Podastronaut.
Sounds like a lot of supernatural baloney to me.
Supernatural, perhaps. Baloney, perhaps not.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Presents podcast, the podcast about the genre movies that inspired the Anomaly Film Festival taking place in Rochester, New York. Hey, watch this. If you're watching on video, guess what I got? It's a graphic. So we're taking place on
November 15th,
2026. It's a cool graphic. It's also a good reminder because I always forget the dates this early in the year. So here we go. We are actually back at the Little and the Dryden. Check us out at anomalyfilmfest.com. My name is Matt Austin, and tonight I am joined by the Podcastronauts. I've got Kristen Pelk-Pacheco with me.
Hey, everybody.
I've got Megan Murphy.
Hey, they haven't kicked me off yet. These are fools.
And we've got a special guest Podcastronaut tonight. I am so thrilled he could be here with us. Gavin Mevious of the Mixed Reviews podcast and the Q Division James Bond podcast. So thrilled to have you in, Gavin. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan, so I'm just, don't mind me if I look a little red. I'm like, I get to be here.
Well, thanks. We're big fans too. So we met Gavin. I've been following Gavin on socials for probably, I don't want to put a date on it because it'll date both of us, but.
Yeah, you received the court documents, right? That you're not allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah.
My lawyers have been in touch.
Yeah. So 500 feet later. So following each other on socials and then got the chance to meet in person at the festival this year. Gavin is a film editor. He edited the film One Night Cherub, which was one of our favorite shorts. So we were thrilled that he was able to make it along with his fellow filmmakers from Austin. And then we're so excited. We wanted to have Gavin on the podcast because we wanted to talk more movies with him.
I just want to, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to talk you guys up. I love your film festival. I've been a fan and a supporter from very early on. I was one of the original Kickstarters. Every year that you had a Kickstarter, I donated because I just really want to support everything you do. Because, first of all, a genre film festival is an amazing, extraordinary beast anyways. And there should be more of them. And you guys are just like leading the way in terms of the way that you do it. Like, there's such a community there. It's so beautiful. I've been trying to make it out every year that you've, and because I mean, literally putting a film that I edited in certainly helped, but like I made it a point to finally get out there this year, and just seeing the way that you guys run it, and it's really beautiful. Because I work for the New York Film Festival here, editing their videos, their Q&As and whatnot during the festival, and it's such a, for such a massive organization, such a tightly wound ship, and to see it on, you know, your level, like, it was like, holy crap, how do you do this? How, like, you guys, like, your blood, sweat, and tears are truly in it, and it pays off. So thank you for having me. Thank you for having the film. It was so welcoming and so nice. And what a beautiful time.
Thank you. I don't know if we can do the show now. We're so
yeah. No, I'm emotionally compromised.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. That was great, everybody. I'll see you.
Come back next week for another week presents Mutual Admiration Society.
Is my $5 in the mail?
It's going. It's got to get a stamp.
Legal documents. So we're here tonight, not only to fawn over each other, but to talk about a movie that I don't have. Had you guys seen this before? I know, Gavin, you have. Gavin actually suggested this to us.
So that's for me, you know how you have certain films that are always on the like, I should see this and I bet I'll enjoy it, but like the time never comes around. So this was perfect because this made me go, hey, watch that thing. You'll probably like it. And spoiler alert, I did. It's very much my shit.
Same. I hadn't heard of it before. And as soon as I looked it up, I cleared the schedule and buckled in for that and then had it in the background. Before I hopped on, I was like, I need to rewatch those last few minutes.
See the vibes.
And I even put on a witch shirt today.
Yeah.
Very on brand. Yeah. And I was the same boat with KP. I had not heard of it before. I saw the list of suggested movies you had, Gavin, and I was like, man, I hope he picks that because I have never seen it.
Yeah, I did. I sent a list, and a lot of them are movies that I've either talked about before or I consider like my favorite films. But what I like about V is, sorry, have you introduced the fact that it's V yet?
No,
that was that was very organic, though.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, that was perfect.
If I'm honest, Gavin, I was going to let you do it because I wasn't sure how to pronounce it. So,
yes, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I'm so bad with pronunciation. I'm pretty sure there's actually like a slightly more like accent on the Y, so it's more like V. Yeah, but I don't want to insult anybody, so I just say V. But V, which is a 1967 Soviet film, I think that all the movies that I sent on the list are like movies that inspired me when I first started, like movies that got me into the idea of wanting to work in film. Like I sent Chungking Express, which was I saw when I was 11. It was the first film I realized like, oh, like a movie is made by people and like has a style. And Clue and Batman Returns have been my favorite films since I was a little kid. And Tank Girl, I've spoken about on other podcasts because I'm just a huge fan. But V is something I saw much later in life. I want to say I probably saw it maybe the pandemic. And it was one of those things that like, even though I'd already been an editor for 15 years at that point, like I watched it and I was like, this is why I want to make films. Like movies like this existing is like why I want to do this, because it's so what's the word I'm looking for? It's so simple and yet complicated. It's so full of beautiful filmic tricks, like live action, rear projection, stop motion, costumes, prosthetics, and just, but also beautiful, simple storytelling. And yeah, I'm so happy that none of you had seen it before, because I wish I could go back and not have seen it before and watch it for the first time, because especially KP, as you were saying, that ending is like, it's mind blowing. Like yeah. you watch it now and you're still like, how did they do that?
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's one of those interesting, because it's not a long film and it's a perfect little folk tale. And it just leads you down and you're like, oh, it's getting kind of whimsical. It's getting kind of weird. And then it just like shoots you with a bazooka in the face at the end.
Yeah, I love that it's not afraid to play with genre, because there is quite a bit of it that's very silly and clearly purposefully silly. Like like the score is like and during points and you're just kind of like, yeah, like great. Like there's a man pretending to be an old witch carrying another man through the sky. Like
yes.
Which also the old witch is a drag role, which I love that it is a man playing that old witch.
One of the other funny parts that took me out immediately was when they're just like yelling with the birds. Knock it off. It's like, okay. I had a double take. I went back and I was like, what sound did that band make?
Well, I appreciated when it started right off and we're like a seminary, like a school for possible like religious figures. And these are like the rowdiest, like most untrustworthy dudes ever. Like,
right.
They're stealing birds. They're snatching up women. They just cannot wait to go on break and cause more trouble. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. This is not going to be like the faith fight. I thought it would be like, oh no, like a man of faith again. No, I don't know if he believes in anything, but like whatever he wants in the moment. As we talk to our protagonist, what a mess. But I appreciate that. This dude's a mess.
It's such a fascinating way to tell the story, because I saw somewhere as I was reading, because I again had no frame of reference, that this is kind of the same story that Mario Bava's Black Sunday is.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's such a wild flip from Black Sunday, which is such, I mean, it's the polar opposite of this film. Like, it is.
Mood-wise?
Yeah. No, go on. Sorry.
And this is totally the opposite. It is, again, it's got that really light folktale, fairy tale kind of feel to it that Black Sunday really doesn't. it makes it a bit more enjoyable. It's such a twist on it. It was interesting.
It's funny. I'm a eternal student as well, and I'm sure as fellow nerds, no offense if you're offended by that, but
100.
I'm sure you are too. Yeah.
We know what we're about. Yeah.
And I have to, when somebody's like, research something, I was like, I have to do everything. So my husband actually found me a copy of the short story, which is by Nikolai Gogol. And this is a direct, almost one for one of the short story. It's kind of crazy. I think the only thing that's maybe different, and I might just be confusing the two, is there's a point in the middle where somebody tells him another story about a bride attempting to like ride her husband as a witch, and he's like, oh, that happened to me.
it's
a common
not,
witch thing.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this is something that just happens from time to time.
It just happens, right. Yeah.
No need to worry.
but I love that this was such a pervasive like folk tale in the Soviet Union that for years, places outside the Soviet Union thought that this character V, Gogol created out of his own imagination, was like an old like reaching back thousands of years folktale. When he had just came up with the early 1800s, there's like references to it in like Scottish books about folklore in the late 1800s, being like, ah yes, we have similar spirits. And it's like, I guess maybe you do, but he just made it up. Like, it's not
I guess in some cases aren't all folktales made up. I guess
so it's like but I do love that it has that power, that it was just like, yeah, yeah. It's this thing, it's a part of our culture. And it's like, is it? Kind of.
It is now. Right. It just started, you know, much later than you would expect.
Well, it has that perfect folklore rhythm. Like, you start, like, our protagonist doesn't know of these things. You know, like, you know, and then, they, you know, you go off on a journey. There's, like, two journeys. A journey where they find the witch in the classic, like, asking for hospitality, following rules or not. Apparently, in particularly Ukrainian folklore, there is a kind of witch who rides people like a horse into the sky. So, like, this is a thing that happens. You know,
once again, then, it's just a common occurrence.
It's a thing that happened, right? And then you have an additional journey with them going. So it all has that thing of like, okay, now you like, did you cross the boundary, or you encountered something that you weren't expecting, and now you have to finish it. So it has that, yeah. And then, of course, the perfect like three nights, which is just so fairy tale. Like, and then it allows it to, you know, the first night's gonna be bad, that second night's gonna be worse, and then you're bracing for the third night, which is just great because, like, you know, and it's not like, oh, I'm not. It's not boring. It's like, oh, I can't. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready for this. He's not, but I am, and I love that. Plus, from what I've read, the fact that it was folklore is so. This is made during in the Soviet Union,
yes,
and it was during a thing called Khrushchev's thaw, which is like where they got to be. The artists got to have a little more like maneuvering room, not like carte blanche, right? And I think they the filmmakers were very smart that they use folklore to kind of make a horror film, because they're like, oh, it's folklore. We celebrate that here because it's culture, right? So in a way, it's kind of like a stealth horror film because there was nothing to object to when it's like, oh, no, this is, you know, we make paintings of this and we celebrate this strong history. And instead, they made this wild film with these images that to this day, I'm like, some of them are going to stay with me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine watching it in 67 going like, what?
They had the three big strikes against them, too. The things that you weren't really like you said, religion, which is supernatural. And also, I had the third one. Now I can't remember what it was. But it was just it's those things that they were like, you can't make films about this. And they're like, well, it's a folk tale, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, and horror. That's the.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, is it like the allusions to sex? That's what I was like. No. My brain is like.
No, everybody loves that.
More, please.
That's how you get them into the theaters, right?
And it's like perfect because that's what like a fairy tale or a folk story does, is it kind of like stealths wisdom and knowledge in a culture. So it's like they're using a folk tale to do what a folk tale does, which I love, you know, like just, hey, remember this stuff and you can hear some thoughts that maybe you didn't have, but we've disguised them, you know, to keep the flame. Yeah.
Have any of you ever, and this is like just a side tangent, but have you ever heard of the fairy tale of the boy who left home to find out about the shivers?
Oh, they did that in Fairy Tale Theater with Shelley Duvall. Yes. I think Peter McNichol was in it.
Correct.
Look at this information I have.
It has a very similar structure to that, because that's a fairy tale about a boy who doesn't believe that anything can scare him, and he eventually like goes to this kingdom and they're like, if you stay the night for three nights in this haunted castle, you get to become, you like get to take over. And he goes and he has each night's an increasing more haunting, but nothing like affects him. He like befriends the ghost and everything, and finally at the end they're like, okay, you get the kingdom and you have to marry my daughter. And he's like, oh no. Like, and that scares him, and that's and so this is like has actually like maybe a more effective ending, but every time I watch V, I'm like, oh yes, I think of the fairy tale theater, because I just remember them bowling with skulls in the fairy tale theater.
God. You are like I've had that in my head. I'm like, oh my God, I'm picturing it exactly. I watched it a lot. It was at the library and you could rent it.
Fairy Tale Theater's great. I mean, a lot of filmmakers from that time period, it's undersung. You had Francis Ford Coppola doing some of them, Tim Burton doing some of them. Like,
exactly. Hey, everybody, a side quest. Go find Fairy Tale Theater.
Okay. Looking up to see if our local library has it anymore. No.
It's just somewhere. It's on the VHS rack, probably, but it's there. Now I'm in the mind of the ghost of Mr. Chicken, because it's kind of the same. Never mind.
Yes. I flung my cord. Yeah. But yes, the ghost of Mr. Chicken. Yeah. Which I only recently saw within the last couple of years for the mixed reviews, because we do a Halloween episode every year. And one year we did ghosts on film, and I wanted to make sure I got some comedies in there, because I was can't all be spooky, spooky all the time.
Yeah, that's right. That's a solid choice. You're like, huh, you don't always think like, nah, it's kind of wacky.
Yeah.
It's not nuts. So, awesome.
I saw it when I was a kid, and then it was just on Svengoolie. So I got to watch it with my kid on Svengoolie, and it was.
I love it. You know what's interesting with me is this reminds me so much of one of my favorite films, House or Houseu.
Yes.
From 1977. And, you know, you all know I wasn't saying like that's what the inside of my head looks like. I feel like it's cute, but it's creepy, and there's no and I was like, oh God, I wonder. I did a quick bit. I couldn't tell if it had been inspiration or not, but it feels so that whimsicalish nature of, but there's still terror. It's still scary, and then like the use of color, and that surrealism is very interesting, and you can kind of see a thread whether it was intentional or not. I was like, oh yeah. They had a skeleton. Once the skeleton showed up, I'm like, yeah, it's just a full-on House on Haunted Hill skeleton.
and what I like,
Murgo.
Yes. and what I like about the spectacle portion of it too is that it's not just used for, like, it'd be one thing if it was only for the superstition parts of it or the supernatural parts of it. But like, there's shots of him running and it's clearly the actor running in place and they're just rear projecting behind him, and then have people like running like pieces of grass around him to like create that movement. And it's so beautiful, like, because it creates that otherworldly feel of like, what am I looking like? What is wrong with the motion here? Why does it look like this? But it's very cool. So it's nice that it's not fully just reserved for the bits in which it is, you know, supernatural. It's for the bits that like, just to remind you, the whole thing is a fairy tale. Yeah. That it sort of doesn't take place. Like it is there to teach you a lesson, and it is there to like be like, oh, be careful. If you don't have as much faith as you think you do, you shouldn't get yourself into these situations. But also to be like, oh, but it's also a fairy tale.
Yeah. I think that opens, we start talking about the cinematography, which is like, it is a simple fairy tale like story, but where the complexity comes in is the visual style, the way that it is like, it's not realistic. It is, has that, like, it's letting you know you're watching a story almost like it's on a stage, right? And then of course we get into like, how they do the supernatural and the effects, starting with the witch riding him, which in all honesty, I did not expect where that was going. Like, oh my God, the witch is fully on him.
Yeah, it was that with the broom that took it wasn't just, I'm going to be on his shoulders and ride him like a horse. I have the broom in my hand.
Yeah, it was like Baba Yaga style, like when you see a classic.
Yeah.
Which illustration where they're on somebody and their little legs are crossed. I'm like, oh, there we go. That's a classic. Yeah. And then the beautiful design of the like chapel where the body is, where every painting in there, every like religious icon is the most terrifying thing I have ever seen. They are all just staring out, like wishing you the worst. Baby Jesus hates you. like I can tell. There's that one shot, like the Madonna shot. I'm like, what's going on with that baby? Oh, that's Jesus. Oh no, buddy.
So many glorious candles.
My glorious candles, God. Yeah. And like just the way that they, because there's also, speaking of the church, like they use a lot of reprojection in the church too, because one of my favorite shots is when they clearly have him on basically like a rotating platform and they're just spinning him with the rear projection of the church behind him. And so you feel like you're doing a complete 360 around him, but you're actually not seeing that much of the church because he's the one that's moving, not the camera.
Yep.
It's a brilliant choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, this movie's going to make me dizzy. Oh, yeah. and I love little things like, first night it's cats.
Yes.
And then like the second night it's like birds, you know? And I'm like, oh no, what's third night? Everything.
Yeah.
Bird comes out of a book at one point. Like there's no entry point. It just comes out of a book.
And she says like vampires, and it's not like three. It's
They're all like painted. You can see like paint strokes on all the creatures, and they're painted that same gray blue that the chapel is. In fact, like that only bit of color is our protagonist in his, and it's not a lot of color. It's like brown and blonde or later gray. Later gray. Good job, buddy. But like, I love that like they kept that color of like that became the supernatural color. That little bluey gray. Her skin is kind of like this pale, and with a fantastic blue eyeshadow.
Okay.
The style and the little like a daisy like crown, like gorgeous in death. I dig her style.
Yeah, you still gotta look great in the coffin. You
can't. You're like, no, lay me out good.
Especially as it's spinning around.
Well, that was, I was going to say, that's the escalation that I really love. The first night she like walks towards him and she's kind of like, I can't.
She's kind
really
of miming.
Yeah. And the classic, he draws a circle, which I think a lot of people instantly understand that, oh, that's protective, you know?
Yeah. But then the second night she's like, no, I'm going to ride my coffin into your circle. Like, I'm going to like boom.
And she's in it like a little dragster.
Like, like a little wacky racers. Like. Like you need like, what was his name, like Muttley or whatever, that
Flash and Muttley, exactly. Yeah, it's
yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, that was really brilliant. Which is funny, but also like, oh my God, imagine a coffin coming at your head, right? Like the circles worked, but like for how long? Like things are getting, first it's like, you know, a young woman. Okay, I could probably take her. She's a witch, but like physically she looks, you know, and now you're like, oh no, she's in like a whole ass coffin being slammed against here. This is a problem. That's why he's like at first, and the perfect, like, I can't do the third night. Because like you're looking for her, like, I can't do it.
But that goes back to that like classic what you were talking about, the like the Joseph Campbell hero journey. Like you need that moment right before the very end where there's the refusal of the call, and then finally like, no, I guess I have to do it. But I love that this is preceded by a vigorous dance and then getting wasted.
I can't convey how much drinking this character does, how much of it he's at least semi-drunk, if not completely blasted. And that's like before the supernatural stuff.
Right.
Like just a steady state of like inebriation.
Yeah, he was going to do it anyways. He was going to be at that level before.
And no matter what.
He simply just did not want to be there.
No.
Yeah. Once he realized who it was, he's like, I don't have to go, right? And they're like, no, your ride's already here. Get in.
Exactly.
She asked for you specifically.
And I do love that like I get it, like it's funny because it's in a very Soviet sort of way, like it is a peril of capitalism because they only send him because like, listen, the guy is a wealthy landowner and he donates a lot, so like you gotta do it. But I love that nobody questions why he was asked for by name except for the father, who's like, he's like hey, did you know her? And he's like, no, I certainly didn't recognize her as a witch. And the father's like, well, you must be renowned for being a holy man, then. That must be it.
Yep. Just club her to death at all.
Yeah.
So it's Coma Brutus. He's an interesting character to be our lead because, like, he's kind of like, I don't think contemptible, but I guess a little contemptible. Like, he's not a hero. He's one of these, like, students who are just, like, drinking and stealing and causing a ruckus. And, like, when they find this old woman and they're like, hey, you have to let us in because, like, we need a place. Like, he just takes a fish and starts eating it. He didn't ask, you know? And it kind of, like, speaks. And he doesn't, like, change in the story. Like, he doesn't have a moment where you're like, oh, he's going to have, like, either, like, a come to Jesus moment, the little baby Jesus staring at him, or, like, a moment, like, or, like, oh, God, I really have to buckle down, and, like, the power God. No, I mean, he calls God as kind of, like, the rules say, which, that if I say the stuff in this book, that'll protect me. Like, that's the logic he's working on. He's never believing. And he's also constantly trying to run away from this obligation, trying to jump out of the wagon with the guys. I love the old guys. He literally jumps a fence and starts running after that second night just to see how far he can get. Not far.
No.
But like, yeah, he's just, you know, and the fact that he did, like, okay, so a witch did ride you like a horse magically through the sky, right? but then obviously this is kind of what seals the deal, is like he like beats the witch, you know, and then takes off. Like when she becomes like, oh, a young woman, maybe she's young, he just leaves.
Yeah, like he doesn't check.
Yeah,
it'd be like, hey, this is a weird thing that's happening between us. You okay?
I'm not excusing the witch's actions, but I also feel like there's, like, you know what? Two bad things can be true at the same time. They're toxic together.
But that's actually a really good point, Megan, too, because the witch doesn't seek them out. And that's something I guess I hadn't thought about before.
Yeah.
Encounter with the witch is fully sparked by them showing up and being like, we need a place to stay.
Yeah. And she so says no at first.
Right.
She so says I'm like full up and
roaming the countryside looking for a handsome young witch. By the way, he's very handsome. Every time I watch the movie, I'm like, this dude would clean up in Bushwick. He would be so just where I live. I'm like,
with that
popular. Yeah, exactly. The whole cut, people would be like, oh my God, who are you? What's your story?
Yeah.
But
you're a character.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Like it's not like she's like roaming the countryside. She's like minding her business, and she's like, okay, well, if you're gonna come in here and you're gonna, then I'm gonna have to ride you like a bat. I gotta do witch
stuff now.
Right, like that. Exactly. You interrupted the witch stuff. This is really your fault.
Yeah, but it's weird because, like, yeah. So there's not a hero. And it's not like, it's just, it is interesting because it's like a thing that happens to a dude. But I kind of like that as a thing for a fairy tale, because like, it's not like you're chosen or anything. Sometimes a thing happens. Yeah. Sometimes you are in the wrong place at the wrong time, or you say the wrong thing, or you're rude to the wrong crone. Yeah. And yeah. Nice. Like, yeah. And be kind to crones, y'all.
Lack of faith in his... Mm. I mean, even when he does try to run away, he's like, well, I'll get all that money, right? Like, he thinks yeah. there's still, at the end, he will get money. And then the two other guys at the end are like, yeah, if he had more faith, he probably wouldn't have died. They're like, right. Did he die?
Which is not, that is maybe the one big change from the short story, is the short yeah. story is like very much like, no, he died because he did this. Like, this is, and it does have that scene where the two guys are discussing it, but neither one is like, did he die? They're just like, oh yeah, sad that he's dead. But the movie's kind of like, did he? And it's like, why are we supplying it out for this man?
Yeah, maybe a sequel.
Me too, yeah.
So they did remake this very loosely, apparently, in the early 2000s with, I want to say, I'm gonna get it wrong, it's not Jason Isaacs. I feel like it can't possibly be Jason Fleming of okay. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen fame. And I believe they followed that up with a couple sequels, and one of them was like Conan, co-financed by China. So like, it's like V goes east or something like that. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
I'm afraid I'm curious now. Damn it!
Open the door, and I'm going yeah. to walk right through yeah. it. Yeah.
No, Megan KP, have more faith. You will survive the three nights.
Okay, it's going to be fun.
He presents V Cinematic Universe series coming soon.
Yeah. No, I'm getting 1,000 gold coins. It's fine. It's going to be a cakewalk. I know how to draw a circle.
I know how to draw a circle. Today. I got some books. I can change.
I got books. What I find very interesting, right? So again, we're talking about the escalation of the three knights, right? So like they kind of establish that like when she rises, she can't see him, right? So the first one is just her, and that's why she's kind of like hitting the barrier, which I love, because it's like it's a little mime in there, right?
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And then we get like, okay, she can't see, but she has a coffin, but she's still kind of on her own. So I love the third comes in, and that's when we finally get V. We don't get V until right. the very end. And it's kind of this idea of like, she can't see him. Like, he's protected by the circle, perhaps, maybe whatever remnant faith he has. But I love it. It's another classic fairy tale thing where he's like, I just won't look. Yes. I just won't look, and he won't be able to see me. And V has, this is my favorite design part, it's just this big blocky creature, right? Like it's almost like this troll situation. But he has these like super long eyelids or eyelashes that he has to ask others to flip up so he can see. But like then he can see, and we have our guy kind of look, because like, I mean, I would be curious. I gotta be honest. I love to say that I would just trust. Like, if I'm hearing, like, someone's going to flip his eyelids open, I would probably turn too. And that what allows V to see, like, V's vision, right?
He's sort of shaped, just to give a visual for those who haven't seen it, he's sort of shaped like Gossamer from Looney Tunes, who's the big orange monster that's always after Bugs Bunny, but shaved. Like, tiny arms, big, broad. But yeah, and I love that you're right. It's so funny, too, because... It, like you said, there's this escalation and there's all these monsters. There's like the skeletons and the cats and the birds and the like, they're crawling down the walls and there's some little people dressed as monsters too. And some of them have really insane faces and it's all this stuff. And then she's like, bring out V, and he comes out. And I swear to God, on the face of Coma Brutus, he's like, that's V. Like, I swear to God, he looks kind of like, wait a second. He's like, that skeleton guy over there is a little scarier than V.
Like, no, maybe it's not so bad.
Right, exactly. But then he's like, actually, no, I won't look at him. Like,
It's funny because he has that wisdom.
Yeah.
But he just can't, listen, I think that like a lot of things, like even if we're talking like Orpheus, like the thing of like, don't look back, but it is so like tied, I think, into like human stories.
Yeah.
That like instantly.
The Bible has it too. Not to get biblical on you, but the
he had a Bible, life. So.
Yeah, yeah. He did have a Bible.
This is all.
This man.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I like that. So like as a story, as an audience, you instantly understand that logic because it hadn't been set up. It's not a thing he read, but you're like, right. Oh, no, that's not, that makes sense. That makes sense. Don't look at the thing that can see you because I feel he can see you. But, you know, our boy isn't a hero.
If he had more faith in his own belief and not faith in just the rooster crowing, because that's what does him in, is the rooster crows. He's like, oh, it's all over. And he looks back and it's like, you should wait just maybe two more crows. But
pick up on a pattern.
He's unable. This is the third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, like, so it's like an hour 17.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that the nights last about 5 to 10 minutes film-wise. And the film's not interested in trying to make it seem longer. There's not a dissolve. You don't see, I guess, a little clock for some reason in the chapel. It's just a thing happened and the night's over. And I was like, I like you, movie.
We saw the most exciting thing we had to see. We're in, we're out.
We're in, we're out. Like, don't fill time. We don't have time. Let's just do the thing. And I was like, thanks, movie. I'm in good hands. I was afraid of repetition. Now we're good.
In fact, her spell to rob him of the color of his hair maybe takes longer than the night itself of her like crashing into the barrier in her coffin car. Like, she's like, okay, well, that's not gonna work. I'm gonna cast one spell I know can reach you.
Yeah, that was interesting because it adds danger again, because at first you're like, oh, he's safe, and then you're like, oh, okay, but she can still mess with him. So like, right. Oh, what's anything's possible. Apparently one of the dudes took it offensively that they said, hey, you have gray hair like this guy.
Yes.
He's like, I'm sorry. That's my thing. It's my thing in this village. Okay. How dare.
But that's what I was going to say is that, like, it's very funny that like, that's the thing that sort of alerts the villagers like, oh, maybe something else is going on here. Maybe, like, he, besides the fact that he's kind of acting crazy, because that's when he's doing his little dance and everybody's like, why are you dancing? And it's just crazy.
Like, he's just spiraling.
He's spiraling, exactly.
They provided a band, though. He's like, give me some musicians. They're like, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
We'll eat our borscht. We'll watch a dinner and a show.
Yeah, a dinner and a show.
Small town. You have to take the entertainment when you can. So, yeah. Right. That band's been waiting their entire career for somebody to pop out and go, give me a tune.
And by band, it's a guy with a flute. He never gets a chance to play it. Yeah, good for him.
And also, he's a guest, you know? They're just being hospitable. Like, how many times...
dance.
Exactly. How many times have you invited somebody over for dinner and they're like, well, we got to dance. And you're like, I bring out the band.
Go get my saxophone from 8th grade. We gotta make this happen.
You too, Matt. You too. Yeah.
I think one of the other things that's interesting to me, I guess they're dealing a little bit with class in that. So the only reason that he is like feels that need to go, well, it's because like the head priest guys, like, you have to go because they have a connection to this lord, basically. And like you could tell because they were bringing stuff to him and he was going to get him books. So we know that there's a established situation there that they kind of like have to send this dude, even though he's like, I don't want to go. But I was like, I'm not going. He's like, yeah, no, you're going though. So like, you know, but then you have this, the father. And I think it's kind of revealed because like that after that second night, when Korma goes there and says, listen, I don't want to basically like, I don't want to be rude, but like your daughter kind of is in league with Satan as a witch, right?
Right, right. He does actually kind of say that. Maybe your daughter might know Satan. I know. I'm not making an accusation.
Yeah. And it's kind of
weird last night.
But like the dad isn't like surprised or yells at him. He's like, yeah. Because they have the power. What's someone going to do? Like he like obviously like owns that land and that village is under his control. So if his daughter is out, like apparently rode at least one other dude, we hear. Like,
yeah.
And the villagers talk about, was it, it's Penachek, like her title?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Which I'm assuming is kind of like lady. Yeah. So apparently, like, she could do whatever the hell she wanted, and no one was going to stop it anyway. But I love that thing. Like, oh no, the dad knows you. That's not a bit of information that's going to change anything. You still got to stay there the third night. His little dove needs a chance at salvation. Though I don't think that was her plan. Her plan was to fuck with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the dad interprets it as like she wanted her soul saved. Like, yeah, dad, that's exactly what I wanted.
No, she wanted this guy.
Yeah, 100%. Which I actually like that energy. Listen, I know that witch thing happened, but also like, you know, you cannot beat me to death. So I think, yeah, you know, I get to have, you know, like, I think that's only fair.
It's funny because, you know, people come up sometimes. I think of when Shannon Doherty died and she had a list of people who weren't allowed to come to her funeral.
Oh my God.
The opposite of that, right? Where it's like, you're coming for 3 days and you're going to read my dead body.
Leslie, KP, that's the energy I hope to bring in this world. I'm either creating a list of people who can't come or a list of people who have to come.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to the point where, like, need to take 4 days of PTO. This is how it happens.
Do you feel like life is a lot lately? Yeah, same. I'm Emily Hesney Lynch, host of It's a Lot, a podcast about social media, parenthood, and beyond. We talk about the all-consuming, weird, and wonderful stuff that makes life a lot. Tune in for honest conversations with parents, social media experts, authors, content creators, and more. New episodes drop every other Tuesday. Check out It's a Lot wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
For you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you live.
I was also going to say, Matt, I have no idea how old your kids or kid. Multiple kid. I have no idea how old, but like they're going to get to that stage where they're, you know, they're rebellious rock music communing with the devil. And you're just going to have to go with it. You know,
I can only hope. Yeah. Exactly. See, this is the thing, though, Gavin. He's my kid. So it's going to be that thing where it's going to go the other direction.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to be going to seminary because we just dragged him to Descendants.
He's going to be like, hey, somebody just requested I spend 3 nights in their tomb. You're going to be like, I don't think it's a good idea.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
How much did you say they're paying?
Yeah. Wait, 1,000 rubles?
Maybe we can swing it. Go into your college fund.
You have been wanting that Nintendo Switch. So.
I want to talk a little more about that final scene because it's not just like creatures coming out. They do a great effect where it's like they're coming down the wall. The thing that got me the first thing is the hands. Yes, KP, you did exactly that. Because at first I was like, okay, hands coming through the wall. Creepy, yeah? And then like you get another shot and you realize they're the size of him. Like, it's like a forest of these, like, blue-gray hands. I'm like, where does that visual come from? Like what is this referencing, you know? And then there was, like, this weird skeleton tentacle creature that we only see once. And I'm like, oh, go back to him. I like him. I want his story. But it keeps coming. The kids keep coming, you know?
And the short story provides none of that. Like, that is the creation of the filmmakers.
It's
basically... like, I'm not saying it's not descriptive, but it's basically kind of like ghouls, you know, like, you know, and I read a translation, but like, it's kind of like, yeah. And then all the ghouls come and not great.
The filmmakers were like, oh, we'll give you ghouls.
And I love how through different like practical effects, impossible like physics happen. Like there's one thing where like these ghouls are like coming through the wall, and like theoretically I know, okay, there's probably space behind the wall, that's all. But like when you're just looking at it straight, it looks like they're just kind of emerging through like the wood, and you're like, oh, that's disconcerting. I don't, because you can't stop it up. Like they don't, it doesn't have to be ghoul sized holes, they'll just come through. Yeah, but it's almost like they're crawling and like it's good stuff.
And that's one of my favorite things in horror movies, actually. I talked about this before years ago on a podcast that doesn't exist anymore, but there was the Tribeca Film Institute's podcast, and I got to talk with Glenn McQuaid, who's a genre filmmaker himself. I was talking about how, like, lack of physics is something in horror movies that always gets me. I think of when I was a kid, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, the shot that bothered me the most, which doesn't hold up by any means, but it was very cool as a kid, is Freddy has this like really long bendy arm at one point where he's like,
and
it freaked me out as a child. Or I think of there's an opening scene to Dario Argento's Inferno, which is his like pseudo sequel to Suspiria, where this woman like finds like an entire house underwater, and the scene lasts for like 10 minutes and she never comes up for air. And I'm just the whole time, I'm just like,
yeah,
like, how is she breathing?
this isn't right.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
So yeah. That's the, I love that lack of physics because, and it's so well employed, like you said, because it does look like they're just phasing out of nowhere. They're just coming. Yeah. And you're right. Like, obviously, like your brain is like, yeah, there's a door back there. Or
yeah.
But it's so cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh God, what else was the other? I mean, yeah, besides they did like crawling down the walls, they're coming out of corners.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm confused. I'm a little like grossed out. There's something a little gross, like not a lot. They're not gooey. We like horror goo here.
Yeah.
Love a good goo. It's not gooey. So it's the thing that this film's missing, but it's like a dryness actually because of all the cobwebs and you can almost hear creaking, which I've realized I do not like. But in a good way. I like the moistness of a horror goo. It's too dry up there.
Pale like, blue gives like an ashen maybe feel.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like, and the paint, like you were saying earlier, it just has like, that more dry, ashy,
dry.
Like dusty feeling.
And like desiccated is actually really
that
Matt with the vocabulary coming in.
It is that.
But the, and I'm sure this is not like an influence in any way because, you know, very different parts of the world and whatnot. But like, I think of like, you know, Dante's Inferno and the center of hell is frozen and whatnot. And so like that sort of blue, cold, desolate and whatnot, that it's not warm at all. It's not, you know, that sort of loneliness too, because he is alone like that. No one believed him. And when they find him, they're just kind of like, well, I guess he was right.
Oh my God! Like when like the head priest guy comes in there, looks at like the crone corpse because she's turned into the crone, right? Looks at
falling apart.
The student he knows and sent there, and he literally just turns around and walks out. He doesn't even like check on the body or anything. He just like nope, not my problem.
Full Abe Simpson.
Yeah. It's almost as if he's saying, you know, I warned him. It's like, no, you didn't. What?
Basically forced him here.
It was the three nights. Where's my check?
That's going to go to the monastery, right?
Since I'm here, I'll just take it with me. Just write that out.
And I love then that we end back at like the seminary with like the two other guys who apparently were fine.
Yeah.
At the witch's place. And like they're great. And like Corma's already kind of become folklore himself.
Yeah.
Because they keep going like, okay, because they keep saying like, what did he do? And like, what he wrong? And then like, maybe he's not dead. Who knows? And they're not like torn up about it. They're not upset. In fact, they're doing what they always do, which is like they're trying not to work and like slack off, you know? They're just like drinking and eating, I think, scallions. Some sort of onion. And like, I like, because they're telling something that actually happened partly to them.
Right.
But the rest of it is, it's a story now. He's a story, maybe a warning.
Yeah, I was going to say he's become a cautionary tale, which is very funny because it's a cautionary tale that they're clearly not heeding. They're just using as like a way to like entertain themselves. Too,
yes.
Because he's like, maybe that's him coming up the hill right now.
Yeah, I was like, wow, you went to school with this guy.
You were careful with him. He's dead.
Damn, life's tough.
Guys being guys, dunking on him no matter what. It's just guys being dudes.
Guys being dudes. But the thing is, they're at a seminary.
Right.
Like, the theory is that they're going to go on to be some sort of religious or what they call Corma the philosopher. Like, thank you, KP. Tales. Hell yeah.
How they refer to them in the short story too, specifically like the three different like the orator, the theologian, the philosopher, and whatnot, and that's how you can tell them apart in the short story. So I like that they kept that element, even though like we now have visual aid and we can just see that they're different people. But
hey everybody, it's Matt from the Anomaly Presents podcast. I want to take a moment to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts on the Limp Shore Podcast Network. It's Common Thread. Rory Van Grohl and Greg Benoit talk with their guests about how the values, philosophies, and sense of community found in hardcore punk has influenced the trajectory of their lived experiences in unexpected ways. It features organic discussions that illuminate how hardcore punk is the common thread that provides continuity throughout our lives and connects us to one another. It's Common Thread on the Lunch Door Podcast Network, anywhere you get your podcasts.
And their titles did not help them. But again, they did not live up to their titles.
No.
No. You think they just were like, yeah, I guess I'll go to school for this. I'll get money and access to things. Like,
yeah.
It had to be like going to school for HVAC now.
Right.
Well, there's
the
that. There's that,
a fraternity. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's weird because the detail is like when the Lord is asking Karma, like he's like, who is your dad? Who's your mom? And he's like, I don't have either. I'm like, is this an orphanage? is this just like is that what it is? Is no one's been called to it? They're just put there because there's nowhere else. So like that's what you're basing your like you know what? Who knows? Maybe they allowed this as religion because, like, it does not show religion as particularly in a good light.
Right, right, exactly. Because yeah. They're still being paid off, you know, bought off.
Yeah.
By the, yep. They're like, whatever, like, he's the rich guy. You got to go do it.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sneakily, it's also about power. Like, it right. could be about religion, but it's also about who is sending you places and why, and do you have a way to say no and... Yeah, not right. that reflected anything at the Soviet Union in 1967.
Well, I was going to say, like, and then it becomes like a perfect, like, kind of like, hey, guys, what about this? In the Soviet Union? And there, so, yeah, subversive quality is certainly there baked into the concept.
Subversive folklore. Yeah. And it's just like a nice, it is the exact length it needs to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
I don't know if you could stretch that story any further either, because and it's so beautifully done. And I know obviously like part of that, because you were mentioning how the nights are kind of short or just the length that they are. I mean, part of that is just the effects that they're dealing with at the time, too, because they're like, because I guess there was some attempt to maybe do something further and they just didn't have the technology at the time. And so they're like, listen, we're getting what we're getting. But I think it plays out perfectly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it feels
still
more
looks
super
gorgeous.
Oh, my God. Like... Right. Like, I'm just like, I this is gorgeous. I'm also terrified. I'm going to have a nightmare, but I want to watch some more.
What if I went and took an Airbnb there, like a little
I listen, I'll light every candle, okay? Right. And I'll just make sure there's a nice bed in there. Besides that, I think I could rock that room. It has a vibe.
The circle just needs to be large enough for the bed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, here's the one problem. Yeah, you lay up in the ceiling and surprise, there's a big Jesus face up there, which I love that we don't see it right away. And I'm like, oh, damn. Okay, so that might, I might need like a canopy. I just, that's intense. That's just real intense.
Privacy, sir. Yeah, thank you.
I got your baby version just daggers at me, and then I got this going on.
Canopy, post-it notes, whatever.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Man, did we cover this?
Death on that one, huh?
Well, it's a short film, too. Yeah, so, like, I feel bad. Like, you know, it's hard to.
Bad, please.
It's hard to, like, stretch it out too because of the of the way that you know but it's such a joy. If I can, and this is a bit of a shameless plug for that, was one of the joys I had about editing One Night Cherub, because One Night Cherub is a fun little creature feature, and I'm literally going to take every second I can to plug it real quick. Directed by the brilliant Austin King, who's a very young filmmaker, and I think he's got a big future in front of him. Produced by him and his husband, Stephen Hansen, who make up Cloudy House Pictures. They were so nice to invite me to edit it, because I've known, similar to you, Matt, I've known Austin through the internet, the great unifier. And not the thing that's destroying all of our brains and causing all of our problems.
He had a good run. There was a window there where...
Right, exactly. It was good for a good 5 years. But that was one of the things when editing it, I was like, when Austin first told me about it and pitched me out, I was like, there's no way you're going to pull this off. And I know that's horrible of me to say. And then when I got the footage, I was like, oh, this looks great. Like, I'm shocked. Like, this creature, like, you're doing a really cool thing with this creature feature. And it was cool to be able to have that experience, to be able to do something and contribute to something like that. So that's maybe my, like, little tribute to V as well, too, when you came to me and I was like, I want to talk about V. I want to talk about something that has like fun stop motion weirdness in it involved. Yeah. Not that the cherub was stop motion, but he was a very cool puppet. So
yeah, he's a I love killer critters. Yeah. So Demi, stole my heart instantly. And I feel like V also has like, it has a variety of sizes of critters that kill you, which is nice because you like to be scared at different levels. Like you can't look up, you can't look down, you can't look up.
It's so true.
Yeah, you don't get a stiff neck. You're always moving.
Even if he was to drop to the floor, there'd be a cat or a bird.
There's no relief.
Yeah.
Anyway, audience, if you get a chance to see One Night Cherub, you're our audience. And if you didn't see it at a festival, you should go to the next one because FOMO. But also, like, you'll like it. It's exactly what you want. It's a beautiful little creature feature. It's wonderfully queer.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a lesson.
No,
there's no lesson. But that's okay. Sometimes, you know what? Another V thing. Sometimes things just happen.
Yeah, exactly. That, I was going to say, V has a lovely message about how you should be strong in your faith and One Night Cherub. No, does not.
No. Okay, it's all right. You know what? But you know what? Like, maybe that hookup's worth it. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Right, exactly. I mean, you guys brilliantly paired it with Night Stage, but thematically, I was like, yeah. You got it.
Yeah.
You understood.
Yep. Yeah.
The movie I yelled at the most. I'm at home watching the screen of Night Stage. It hits like a certain like halfway point, and I'm yelling at every single character, stop making bad decisions.
You should know better.
You stop it. You weren't even a problem, and now you are. Anyway.
That guy walking around the background? Him. He knows better.
Anyway, hey, also watch Night Stage. If you like yelling, and this is a pause, this is a compliment. I was engaged.
I was just sitting there eating my popcorn saying, what a mess. And this is great. This is great. From the comfort of my own home.
Yeah. I was like, listen, you know what? You need a strong director in theater. You can't just be make stuff up. That's where I got from it. Like, you need to have safety tools. You need to go through and see what people are comfortable with, or this happens.
This happens.
Yep. There we go. I went to a performing arts school. I saw things.
This is my favorite part of every show when I have to try to land the plane.
Yes. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Here you go.
Yeah. So V, I thank you again, Gavin, for bringing this to us.
Yes. Thank you.
Everybody listening, if you haven't watched it already, which I don't know why you haven't, it's 77 minutes. Go watch it.
Exactly.
It's brilliant. And never would have seen it without your suggestion, Gavin. And I feel like so much the richer for it. Like, it is such a great movie. So many like building blocks for the things we love years later. Please go watch it if you haven't already. And Gavin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having
sharing this with us. Please come back anytime. We'd love to have you back.
I would love that. Seriously, I love this show. I love the festival. I'm currently holding my stressed potato. It stays here at my editing desk with me, so like I use it a lot. So
for real, my favorite thing we ever made is that.
It's so good. What a brilliant idea.
So thank you, Gavin. Is there anything you want to talk about? Any projects you've got going on?
I'm sorry, I just saw the multi-eyed potato. So it's the many-eyed potato. Yeah, always ready to be hired if anybody needs a cool editor for film, television, whatnot. I can't really talk about anything I'm currently doing a bunch of ads and stuff. So it's not like I'm like, ooh, secret. It's not like stay tuned to my Instagram and you'll find out. No, it's ads. But not that I'm not thankful for the work. Thank you, everybody.
The lights on, it's great.
Exactly. But yeah, thank you so much. If you want to listen to my ramblings about other movies, I co-host a really cool podcast called The Mixed Reviews with my good friend Louis Rendon. That's been around since 2017. And it's a monthly podcast where we take a film subject such as an actor, director, or mini genre, film history. We learn as much as we can. And then we watch as many movies as we can, and we give all that information back to the audience, and then we tell people what we like, what we don't like. And our next episode, speaking of genre, is about Wes Craven. So that's I was gonna say good old Uncle Wes, RIP. And then my other podcast is called The Q Division, which is done with my good friend Chels Eichholz, and it's a James Bond rewatch podcast. But we're going to be branching out into other things because we're getting to the modern era. I don't want to stop podcasting with her because she's so we're going to start covering other spy films that are not quite James Bond centered, but James Bond centric or inspired,
like Flint and all that stuff.
Yep. Yeah, that's on the list.
Reflection in a dead diamond. Oh, that's weird.
Oh my God.
We showed that at Anomaly.
You did. You did. And if you, and by the way, like, not to plug something that you didn't show, but like, if you like Reflection in a Dead Diamond, obviously Danger Diabolik.
Oh,
huge inspiration on that movie.
Yeah.
Double feature him, baby.
But, yeah.
That's a great idea.
You like that mask thing? Like,
yeah.
And then hopefully we'll see Gavin again at the film festival. This year's edition, I hope you can make it too. It's November 11th.
I would love to.
Please come. If you need more information, check out AnomalyFilmFest.com, Anomaly Film Fest on all the socials. Meg does an incredible job.
Yeah, come hassle me on the socials. Don't hassle me on the socials. Let's just be cool. Let's just be friends.
Like Evan and I were saying, we had that 5-year window where the internet.
Yeah.
Let's keep Anomaly socials just as cool as everything was.
Now you're going to have a heck of a 3 nights on those social, Meg.
Did the block circle.
Ted Megan is the Tom in your top 8 for the next. And again, thank you again for coming in and hanging with us. We'll do it again sometime, I hope very soon. And for everybody listening, thank you very much for spending the time with us. We hope to see you in the theater. It's AnomalyFilmFest.com. Anomaly loves you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.